Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, there are any number of places which require a reservation. Maybe a fine popular restaurant, walk in and say, the hostess says, do you have a reservation? Or maybe it's a seat on a train like the Empire Builder that goes from Chicago to Seattle, and someone says, do you have a ticket? Or maybe it's a football game, or travel, airplane travel to New York or Atlanta or someplace. Do you have a ticket? One time many years ago, I smile now remembering it in this context, I was a seminarian in Rome, and the occasion was a solemn coronation of Pope John the 23rd at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Well, I ingeniously came up with a piece of paper that looked really official. And when no one was looking, maneuvered myself into a place in the basilica, claiming that this ticket was for this place. Well, it turned out that the place I tried to claim was reserved for Pope John's family. And so the Swiss guard smiled and escorted me out, tossed me out on my ear, and left me to take the lower place rather than the higher place, like that parable in the gospel. But I kind of maneuvered myself back into some decent place for the occasion. There are places that require reservations, all kinds of places, real reservations. This morning's gospel tells us about James and John, who try to claim a special seat of honor beside Jesus in the heavenly banquet. They don't know about the reservation business. They don't know that there are some requirements. Drinking the bitter cup of destiny with Jesus, it's a requirement. And being dipped, so to speak, into the paschal mystery of death and resurrection, well, they found out it's a requirement. We probably never think about the full meaning of the deeper significance of baptism, especially when we gather joyously as a family around a newborn infant relative for her baptism. Well, there are all kinds of people. What are we really doing? Beaming grandparents who say to themselves, finally we got a grandchild. Proud parents, uncles and aunts, godparents, maybe little kids on tiptoe trying to see what's going on. What we're really doing is witnessing a ritual which reminds us of the need to die and to rise before entering into the fullness of life. And not just a reminder, but something that actually accomplishes, because it's a sacrament, it accomplishes what it signifies: our first entrance into the Lord's death and share in his resurrection. Each of us has his, her own unique share in the Lord's death. Call it a cross. The one thing we would change in our lives if we possibly could, but we can't. And so we have to come to terms with that, whatever it may be in our lives. One unique way in which our lives somehow pattern the Lord's death, maybe dictated by our personality or dictated by the circumstances of our lives, our employment, or the disappointments that come along, or illness or tragedy. It could be any number of things. But something specific to our own individual person, which becomes associated with the Lord's dying and rising, and which therefore is somehow part of the redemption of the world. We fill up Christ's sufferings, as Paul said. We're all partners with James and John, who did not understand in their first initial insistence that they could do this. They said, in response to the question of Jesus about drinking the cup and being baptized, "Oh, sure," they said, "we can do it." They didn't understand what it would take for them. Little did they know. Often at confirmation, I read the letters and I see the vision that the young people, young men, young women have as they write and request confirmation. And I almost always at the end of confirmation say, you don't know how life is going to turn out. You just don't know. And it won't turn out the way you think it will or should. It never does. But part of confirmation, that confirming with oil, sign of the cross, confirming the grace of baptism at their young adult life, is to say, however it turns out, God promises to be with you in the dying and the rising. Today we have two new saints, both Americans, being canonized in Rome, probably already taken place given the time change. Kateri Tekakwitha of the Mohawk Nation and Marianne Cope. Kateri suffered persecution from her own tribe for her faith and also for the fact that she had a very a face marked by chickenpox. And then Marianne Cope, who went to work with St. Damien on Molokai to care for the lepers. The lepers who had been tossed off ships, forced to swim to that isolated, remote part of the island and live there with each other. She went to work with them. That wasn't quite the way she thought her life would turn out, but it was clearly, as she pondered it, where she ought to be and what she ought to do. Each had her own cross, and so do we. The Paschal mystery comes in many, many shapes and sizes, each carefully chosen for us, people of faith, carefully chosen for us, according not to what we want necessarily, I say this often, but according to what we may need. And each of us receiving that particular element in our life which God determines is just what we need to become truly holy people. To be holy. To be honest, even when it's embarrassing. To be generous, even when it costs something. To be humble before God, but also to see that whatever we do is part of a larger picture, namely the transformation of the world. I often revert to that simple summary that the purpose of the church is to praise God by transforming the world. And each one of us has our own role to play in that, depending on who we are and what we do and what's up. Possible opportunity for us. These days, as we commemorate the 50th anniversary of the opening of the Second Vatican Council, one of its major themes, which gradually surfaced over the 4 years and began to inform all 16 of the documents, one of its major themes was the universal call to holiness. It no longer was the general perception that if you were avowed religious, that was a state of perfection, and everybody else was somehow a second-class citizen in the kingdom of heaven. No, no. Everyone invited and offered a reservation if we're willing to be the best carpenter we can, or the best auto mechanic, or the best bartender, or the best football player, or the best secretary, or the best teacher, or the best nurse, or the best physician, or the best dentist, or the best waitress, or the best deacon, or the best lawyer, or the best student, or the best grocery store checkout person, or the best police officer, or the best postal worker, or the best taxi driver, or the best bishop. That every one of us, whatever our circumstances, is called to be holy. Once again, not pious necessarily, but holy. Truthful, generous, humble before God, and also with a sense that whatever we do has to be seen and experienced as somehow part of the larger effort. That's Catholic holiness, to be part of the larger effort of transformation of the world. It's not just me and my work. It's us and our task, whatever it may be. So add your own occupation, whatever it may be. Carol Hauslander, in the beginning of the classic book, Read of God, about Marian devotion, beautiful book, she said when she was a little girl in England, her relatives would take her to the Marian altar in their parish church, and they would tell her that she should be just like Mary. And as a little girl, she would stand and look at that statue with Mary folded hands, and she said, I couldn't imagine Mary doing anything with her folded hands. That's not what made her holy. So back again we are, the dying and the rising. Each of us invited to do that as best we can, conscious of the fact that God is the one who supplies everything. And God is the one through baptism that links us to the larger task of the church and the transformation of the world. And that is the gospel of the Lord.